He's got the knowledge.
Because once again, I have to come on air and talk about how right I am once again in anything that it comes to sports.
He's got the questions.
I'm going to lose it. Are you kidding me? What are we doing here?
He's got the guests.
20th head coach in Fresno State history here, Matt. Is it hard to believe sometimes still the 20th head coach here in program history?
It's all moved really quickly here over the course of the last five, 6 weeks. But super excited to be here.
Phil Bonatti is the voice for the Central Valley sports leader. Behind the Bench starts now. Brought to you by Helena Agri.
That is right. Behind the Bench here on 1430 ESPN Fresno, the Valley's local sports leader. First show of 2026. Got to get used to that. Hello. Happy January 5th to all of you as we are here in a new year, a new conversation to talk about here on the show, which we are getting going here with the playoffs who are here. NFL playoffs are ready to roll. College football playoff with four teams left. FCF championship tonight. Yeah, that's right. We got a big time championship to crown for the FCS between Montana State and Illinois State. We'll get to it all here in this very brief 1 hour reaction show to the weekend. So let's get right to it. Of course, first of all, thanks to Tony D for tossing it to us in the previous hour. Tony D Show, 2 to 3 p.m. Sportsline Bulldog Hour. Tony D, as always. You can also listen to him live on demand on the 1430 ESPN app or the 1430 ESPN Fresno.com website. Listen to his show, my show, Paul Metter's show. Great return for him on Saturday. Great show from him on the Central Valley Sports Report. You can listen to that from 10 a.m. to noon as well. You also have the Lee's Air Hotline, sponsored by Lee's Air Heating, Plumbing, and Roofing, all that great stuff. You could get into the conversation here with 559-320-1430, the way to reach our show, 559-320-1430, the way to get on the show here today. Lee's Air Weather Check sitting at 58 degrees here in Fresno. A little cloudy, feels like 53. We'll be in the 60s, low 60s the next couple days, but looks relatively dry. I think we passed all the wet stuff over the weekend. So hopefully you're going to be okay with the 50-degree cool weather for the next couple weeks. Like I said, good to be here. We are trying to stream here on ESPN Fresno platforms, Facebook, Twitch, and YouTube. So hopefully you get that roll. It looks like we are rolling. All right. So we'll have that streaming live, YouTube, Facebook, Twitch. Anyways, good to be here, like I said. And let's just jump right into it. I have no time to waste in terms of the topics of conversation we have. And, of course, I have to do this in the Monday show. No matter what the topics are, no matter what crazy world news, sports news is happening, I always have to give the courtesy to ask the question to the producers who are in today, which is we got a double dose of Tanvir and Jorge. Guys, I had a great weekend. Hope you had a great weekend. How was your weekend? We'll start with Tanvir.
Yeah, weekend was fun. You know, me and you did a little thing and we went to the 49ers game. And
for sure.
That was sick. Even though the loss happened 3-13, I still had a lot of fun pregame, and you guys probably saw that on the social media side. Otherwise, had a fun time watching football, even though there was not many consequences except for the last game. That's basically it.
Jorge, how was your weekend?
It was good. I enjoyed it. I think maybe because my team's lost.
So it's good?
Well, my soccer team that I was going for, it wasn't that great.
Rough weekend for your soccer team. Who is it?
Was it Harden? I was going for West Ham on that one. You know what happened to that, if you follow that.
I heard West Ham's having a rough time.
But then Fulham, who I also am interested in this season, had a tied game, so that was good.
That was a sick goal at the end.
That was a crazy
goal. Insane goal.
I certainly had a good weekend myself as well, and with the travel and everything like that, it's going to be interesting to take what we saw from the Niners on Saturday, which was a vastly different opinion of what we thought of them a little bit over a week ago now when they beat Chicago. But That's where we start now, and we're starting talking about that. We'll get into Fresno State conversations, I think, later this week. But it's just the NFL. We got to get to it now. And the 49ers, of course, you listen to the 49ers right here on 1430. You can listen to them throughout the playoffs, however far they go. Same with the Rams as well. We'll have the whole entire playoff slate for you, courtesy of our friends at Westwood One. 49ers lose on Saturday to the Seattle Seahawks in a 13-3 unceremoniously disappointing fashion. It was an interesting game in terms of the way it kind of scripted out for the 49ers. Seahawks had a long, sustained drive to start that game for them. That Tanvir resulted in a field goal, right? That was the first – no, touchdown.
Yeah, the first drive they went –
That's right. They missed a field goal, didn't they?
No. It was on downs.
Turnover on downs. Yes. That's right. It was fourth and goal. It lasted half the quarter. And then, of course, the Niners couldn't do much with it. Get it right back. Ball at the 50. The three plays later, the Seahawks are scoring a touchdown. By the way, ball at the 50, and then they had a penalty. The Niners did. A couple penalties on the special team situations for the 49ers. That was tough for them to swallow. But outside of that, I have the stats in front of me in terms of how the Niners on defense handled the Seahawks, which I would say not the ideal numbers you're looking for if you're going to go give up 39 rushes for 180 yards and a touchdown there. That, to me, is sustainability for the Seahawks and ability for them to just kind of control and dictate what they do. When you get outrun 39-12 in terms of attempts, you know you're having a tough time on either side of the ball. And so is it shocking? I think that's the word I would go to in terms of how just barren the production was from the 49ers offense on Saturday. I think that's where I sit there with that. And the question is, what kind of momentum does that give the Niners into the playoffs? Like, is it nice to have – I'm guessing the double-edged sword is it's nice to have this performance instead of next week when you're in a do-or-die playoff game. You get to get this one out of the way and try to regroup and refresh.
Yeah, I think in terms of the performance, am I shocked that it happened? I think I'm shocked more about the just lack of points that were put up by the 49ers. Am I shocked by the loss? No, I knew the Seahawks defense. This was a very good defense, and I think this was in the Rolodex of things that could have happened in this game when you look at the defensive performance by the Seahawks. I was talking to you when we were coming back. I don't think either team really played that well. I think the Seattle Seahawks, even though we look at the yardage numbers with 180, they had a couple of turnover on downs. They missed two field goals. Jason Myers, this is a guy that has been reliable all year long. And they only put up 13 points on a 49ers defense that I felt like, I don't feel like it is really hampered. And so, I think that there are, yes, more positives on the Seattle side, but I don't think either team played well. For the 49ers, I think for their playoff hopes, this is a team that has been there, done that, and I think that is their biggest quality in terms of their playoff success moving forward. But the 49ers have put themselves in this situation, and to not have home field advantage is really tough, especially when you have the amount of injuries that you have. You would have liked to have those players back.
And the injuries you're alluding to, one of the big sports stories we're going to be brought to you by Valley Pure is Tatum Bethune out for the playoffs. That was officially coming out there with a groin injury. So the Niners will not have Tatum Bethune for the playoffs, which I thought at least a guy you would consider involved in a lot of defensive plays out there for San Francisco. And now the Niners will look to shore up that production that they will lose on the defensive end. And that could spell trouble against what they will face, which is now the Philadelphia Eagles on Sunday in Philadelphia. And I know it hasn't been the same Philadelphia offense that we thought about from a year ago. It's a team that could just disappear for 2 hours offensively. So maybe this is an opponent you would want if you're a 49er fan. I'm not quite sure how 49er fans reacted to yesterday's results in terms of what they were rooting for, how you were kind of going through the permutations of, do I want Chicago again when we just saw them 2 weeks ago, or do I want to face an Eagle team that just, you know, can disappear from time to time, and then you think, well, if you just get a certain couple of plays against that defense, this is enough that you can get a win on the road. Certainly when the building can turn for you there, if you're an Eagles fan, if the Niners want to jump out early in that sense as well. So I'm curious what you're rooting for there. Jorge and Tanvir, as both Niner fans, were you sitting there rooting for a certain situation, or were you in the mindset of whatever happens, happens?
I think that I was rooting for a situation, but I didn't mind that if it happened, you know, whatever happened, happened. I feel like it would have been better to place Carolina than...
I'm sure, certainly.
Right?
Yeah.
But I think if we got to, you know, we're going to go to a Super Bowl, we're going to beat the best teams. And
yeah.
They're going to be
starts with
anyways.
The defending champs, right? Tanvir, are you happy? I know you probably wanted the Carolina result, but the Rams ended up playing it out. But are you okay with Philly rather than Chicago? Is that, or how do you draw that for you in your mind in terms of the opening matchup?
I think in terms of the team that I wanted, I think Philly would probably be the last of the three. But again, I don't mind the team because, as Jorge said, you're going to have to be good teams to get to a Super Bowl. And if Philly's the team, then Philly's the team. Are there things that the 49ers can take advantage of in this scenario? I think they can. And I think that they have players that have played against this team before. They're going to have some motivation to go into Philly and win again. But, yeah, I would be lying if I said that Philly was the team that I wanted before the afternoon window last night.
Another key point and aspect of this Niners team is just the hope that they can get healthy, at least on the offensive side. There were a couple of players that were in that Chicago game that were not in that game last Saturday against the Seahawks with Trent Williams, which, by the way, he completely missed the Bears game outside of one play anyway, so whatever that meant. But the offensive success without him still in that Bears game should be something to take into it. I don't think he was the one that the Niners missed the most on Saturday. I think it was Ricky Pearsall. I think we kind of came to that opinion ourselves. And Ricky Pearsall, from my perspective, and when I was listening to George Kittle talk in the press conference, he kind of had the feeling that Trent Williams certainly can come back for this playoff. It sounded a little more hesitant on the idea if Ricky can go in this Philly game. That's just kind of where my vibe was when I was listening to some of the players speak, especially with George at the podium, in terms of, I wish I had the sound to it, but he didn't really commit to the idea of Ricky being back for a game like this. Now it'd be great to have him, but I'm a little more concerned that the Niners won't have him this week. I'm not reporting anything or anything like that, but that's kind of the vibe I get from the players and from, I imagine, the personnel, that it'd be hard pressed to see if Ricky can go this week, but we'll see. That's my concern.
Yeah, and if you look at just personnel tendencies, the 49ers play a lot of 21. And in terms of defenses that struggle against 21 personnel, the Philadelphia Eagles are in the bottom five. And so if you have separators at wide receiver that can allow you to play 21 personnel like a Ricky Pearsall, then that's going to give you a lot more advantage when it comes to the passing game. When you look at the receivers that this team has lost, Brandon Ayuk and Ricky Pearsall, those two guys were the two cornerstones at this receiver position. And so you've lost those two. Brandon hasn't played a single game this year. Ricky has missed a lot of games. And every game that you see Ricky play, I feel like he has been a game changer for this team. This is a player that didn't have an injury history at Florida. And, you know, shockingly, he comes to the 49ers and, you know, pops up with an injury history.
Not all his fault.
No, not all his fault.
It's not entirely his fault.
No, for sure. But I think if the 49ers do lose Ricky Pearsall and he doesn't play in this Philadelphia game, I don't see the 49ers having a chance.
Yeah,
it's just missing weapons. It's missing another man. Kittle was being double teamed sometimes, and you see it right away, and you see his production was less than the week before.
There were a couple great throws to Juwan.
Yeah, and he's the only one that could get, you know, away from certain people.
Yeah.
Because the rest of them are honestly bench players.
Kendrick Bourne had no catches on Saturday. Like, there was...
Bourne had one, right?
I don't believe he had one.
I don't know if he did, but I remember we were watching a play and Kendrick Bourne was split out wide one-on-one, and I was thinking to myself, if that was Ricky Pearsall, that is a catch, and that's a person that... Brock Purdy does throw to in that situation.
Kendrick Bourne was targeted once. He did not make a grab on Saturday.
Just, you know, tough circumstances, but you need to be healthy. And I think this team is, if they're going to win playoff games, it's going to have to be through that offense scoring more than 30 points. And if you're not healthy, I find it very difficult to score points against defenses like Philly and Seattle.
I think you can push Seattle down deep. I think you can get them a little deeper. I think Seattle doesn't allow you to afford you the opportunity to push the ball down the field a little bit. And I think there could be an emphasis on how far you can get it down the field. Purdy went 4.7 yards per attempt on Saturday, which I don't know in terms of his what he looks like on the year. I mean, just in comparison, Sam Darnold didn't look like he had a spectacular night, but he went 7.6 yards per attempt. And so that's really, to me, a number that is a disparaging side of it as well. But I want to shift over to the Rams real quick, Rams thoughts as well, because we are also have the Rams on this playoff run. The Rams' perspective of getting this win over Arizona, 37-20. At one point, it was 20-16 Cardinals, and you're sitting there thinking, were the Rams really just going to blow this with the Cardinals? But then the offense came alive. Puka Nacua certainly had a thing to say about how the game went for them, and I think that was a nice get-right second half for the Rams. Before the playoffs, that assured them to get to the 5 seed. They will play the Panthers to open the wild card round. And I think on the flip side of what we're talking about with 49ers storylines, there's help on the way for the Rams, including a player I'm sure you heard of, Davante Adams, who looks geared up and ready to go. And I've always said it with this Rams team, at full strength, full health, they are the most complete team in this National Football League. They went 1-2 without Davante Adams in this final three-week stretch, and I do firmly believe they are the team to beat when they have Davante Adams fully healthy and wide, and lining out wide with Puka. The question is, can teams push them on the defensive side? You saw the Cardinals kind of get downfield a little bit with that. Do the Panthers have that capability? I'm not quite sure it's there with them, but there's certainly teams that they could face that have that capability as well down the stretch. And if the Rams do end up winning and end up moving on, they'd be projected to play either Seattle, or if the Niners end up winning but left behind them, they have to go to Chicago or something like that. So that's kind of where we're thinking in terms of that. And certainly Caleb Williams can unleash it down the field against a Rams team like that. But overall, I think the Rams are geared up nicely going into the playoffs. I think they're back to where they should be. And if I'm a Ram fan, I'm feeling really good about where the position of this team is going into the playoffs.
Yeah, it took an absolute maze to get to this position, but I feel like we're in the same spot that we were a couple of weeks ago. I think that's the Los Angeles Rams are the most complete team in the NFC, and I think they should be the favorites to make the Super Bowl out of the NFC. I think when Matthew Stafford is playing at his peak, I think he is a top two quarterback in the NFL. And so now you go into a game against the Carolina Panthers, which the Los Angeles Rams did lose, but they didn't have Davante Adams at that time. And so I think that's going to be a big game changer for this team. They have the highest spread of any team in this wild card round, and I think that it's deserved. And I think that's going to give them the momentum if they play either Seattle or Chicago in that second round to really make a push towards the NFC Championship and beyond.
I think we really felt a difference with that offense the last 3 weeks without Davante. Jorge, you feel it too, right? Like, it felt different without Davante Adams for the 3 weeks they played. Even though it is strange to say it felt different, I think the Seattle game didn't feel different to me. That felt like the classic what the Rams should have been all season, and then it just got away from them in the fourth quarter. But the Falcon game felt completely different, and really the first half of that Cardinal game felt different to me.
I think it felt different because it felt like the Rams could be doing more, and they weren't.
Yeah.
And they were just kind of like just letting the other team play. And it got close for a minute. It got close for a second. And that's when they realized, okay, we got to step it up because we don't want to face the Eagles so early in the season or in the postseason. So they went up a little bit more. And I think that's what it is more than just missing a piece or missing there, because they still have pretty much the same exact offense and except for one person.
It's fascinating to just compare the two teams we just talked about and just kind of where it feels. And you can look at what the Rams schedule looked like, and there has not been a beatdown whatsoever on their side. Not a complete, and I would say, I don't know if I can call it a complete beatdown, but it felt like a dominant loss from the Niners side on Saturday compared to you don't have your mic on.
I have no idea what you're talking about. That was not a beatdown. That was not a beatdown.
I'm not saying a beatdown. I didn't say a beatdown. I said dominated. I thought the game got dominated by the Seahawks.
How many points did they score? 14?
Points do not matter when the phrase of the game.
All right.
They should have had 24. They're 23 or something
like that.
Yeah,
but they didn't.
I get it, because the kicker doesn't know how to kick. And
you don't.
Maybe we could have had a couple more, but we didn't. So
the score is a score. I get it, but I watched that game. I know you watched that game, but I just there was a sense in the building that once the Seahawks got up 10, it was like there's no chance the Niners ever figure out how to get through this game. But anyways, that's just where I'm at. The Rams don't have a loss where I sat there. I'm like, they got purely beaten down, you know. But anyways, we're comparing resumes. We got a whole week to kind of figure this out in terms of all the matchups, and we got only this hour before we got to say goodbye. So let's take a break. When we come back, we got my Who's Been Naughty, Who's Been Nice of the Week 18 slate. So stay with us. Behind the Bench rolls along on 1430 ESPN. Behind the Bench here on 1430 ESPN Fresno, the Valley's local sports leader. It is Monday, which means we got our Who's Been Naughty, Who's Been Nice of the weekend. Jorge, Tim Veer, we got Week 18 edition of this. Where do we want to go first?
I think you should choose Jorge.
Yeah, sure. Why not? Let's go Been Naughty.
Who's Been Naughty? All right, we'll start with the Who's Been Naughty, and we'll go... Why is it not playing on this? Interesting. That was interesting. Did it play? Nope. All right.
It might be the... I might have to change the setting.
Okay.
I don't know why he's been doing that lately. But
okay, give me a sec. I think I can still get it.
You think I should just, you know, voice it out loud?
There we go. I got it. There we go. All right. Yeah. Even to us. I'm going to go to Zach Taylor first. Zach Taylor, who complained after the game that his Bengals were, quote, fighting for their lives when they were down five, when Myles Garrett broke the sack record and complained about the refs stopping the game just a little bit to celebrate the Myles Garrett sack record. And what I say to Zach Taylor about you fighting for your lives is shut up. What a loser mentality from Zach Taylor. And apparently the Cincinnati Brass said, you know what? He's got another year with us. That's fine. That's totally fine for us. We're okay with that being our leader of our football team. But I thought Zach Taylor with complete loser behavior yesterday about the whole Myles Garrett situation. You knew it was going to happen at some point, and I get it. You want to run tempo, and I'm sorry. Don't give up the sack. Don't allow a team to sack you that way. And there you go. And they end up losing. Good riddance. The Bengals really irritated me this year, and Zach Taylor deserves to be on the naughty list in Week 18.
You know, I think Joe Burrow truly saved this team, because if he wasn't on this team, I think this is, I mean, even with him on the team, this is one of the most poorly run organizations in the NFL. To keep Zach Taylor in there because he got to a Super Bowl, got to an AFC championship, I think is more on the quarterback than what the head coach has done. And like, yes, Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins and Joe Burrow have all raved about Zach Taylor, but I think if we're the Cincinnati Bengals, I think you need to look somewhere else. And also the front office is abhorrent. I just think that this team is so poorly run, and this is just a calamity that just stacked on top of itself.
Yeah. I can rave about a great professor I had in college. Did they teach me anything, or did I just have fun in class? No,
I was so close to calling someone out, but you know, I would not do that.
You all had that professor before, right? Though you've all had that teacher. You're like, I love their class. We do nothing. Oh wait, I don't have the skills I need to do what I actually need to do and be good in the workforce. So there you go. All right. Any reaction to Zach Taylor?
I mean, I think he still has some a little bit of credit for to being in a Super Bowl, going to the Super Bowl, because
very slim.
I think that's the only reason why he's staying one more year. Because I mean, if you think about it, this franchise is just one of the cheapest franchises out there, and
oh, yeah, you tell me.
And they haven't really done anything much since or before going to the Super Bowl, so yeah.
All right, well, Zach Taylor on the naughty list. Let's go to the nice list. Hold on, gotta do it the other way. There we go. Thank you, audience.
Thank you, audience. You're great. You're great. I just abruptly stopped it. My bad. Anyways, it's a different format. Ramondre Stevenson is on my nice list. How about 131 yards rushing, two rushing touchdowns? How about another catch for a touchdown as well? 22 receiving yards as well. So three total touchdowns for him. And I just like to just point out from where we started with Ramondre Stevenson this year to a guy who I think a lot of people thought, get him off my football team, me included in that aspect as well, to him being, I think I would consider in the top half of what running backs I would think I could have. There's real sustained success potential in the playoffs. Running back situations, running back cores for the Patriots, I think there's a lot of positivity there. And I know it's the Dolphins, and the Dolphins want to go Cancun. They don't want to be in New England when it's 29 degrees in early January. But regardless, cementing themselves into the top two seeds in the AFC, and Ramondre Stevenson doing it that way certainly will be something I appreciate. So Ramondre Stevenson and the Patriots run attack getting this kind of performance before the playoffs, very, very thumbs up on it.
Yeah, I think Ramondre Stevenson has kind of come around to being a true great number two that behind Travion Henderson. I think this is how it should have been from the start of the year, but obviously Mike Vrabel saw it differently. But I think this is how this team should run. Travion Henderson, I think, is the firecracker for this running back and this offense, and he should get the majority of the carries. And then you have Ramondre, who's kind of the battering ram, but you don't really put him out there to have those fumbles that he had early on in the season. So Ramondre Stevens come on very strong over the last couple of weeks, and I think he's starting to become a real threat for this team as a dual back system versus how he was portrayed at the start of the year.
Yeah, I think he's growing a lot, and I think that's I feel like overall it's one of those players that, you know, at the end of the season he's showing what the growth is, and he did great.
I might sound biased, but I think the running game situation for the Patriots has to be one of the best going into the playoffs right now.
You might.
it might be. But there's some other teams that you could be like, I like what they have, but like if you think of the running and closing the game and closing it out and with the quarterback that combined with it, I'm having a hard time finding a team with a better situation to be able to run the ball and close out a game like that than anybody else. Like, Jacksonville, like where, like find me another team, like Chicago.
Yeah, I would say Chicago, but that's just because their pass offense is just not good enough.
Yeah,
but their run game is really good because their offensive line is just really good.
I don't know if there's another. I'm going through the playoffs, and I'm like, I don't think there's another team I trust running the ball. But maybe Buffalo. That's about it. I think that's where I'm at.
I think it's New England.
Yeah,
I think Chicago's the closest.
Yeah. Let's go to Who's Benatti. And I felt like 18 times yesterday I watched the Bears receivers drop footballs, and they were begging to they did end up coming back and tying this game, which was ridiculous in itself. But I'm a little concerned about the sustainability. The Bears were playing there once. This was their one offense out there. They were trying to win this game. And for about three quarters, this team could do nothing against what I think is not a great Lions defense, you know, out there in terms of it. And so when you're begging them to do this against teams that are going to be better on the defensive side, I think this is an ominous performance from the Bears ahead of their wild card matchup, which will be against Green Bay. And I think there's certainly some hesitation to really pound the drum for Chicago, but I'm taking something from yesterday's performance with the Bears because I thought there were alarming drops out there, and I don't know if that's something that can be cause for concern for this team moving forward, but I believe it should be. I know it's week 18. I know it really didn't quite matter, but I think there was some alarming plays that were not being made by the Bears yesterday.
And I'd like to bring up one receiver in particular, and it's DJ Moore. This guy is being paid more than Devontae Smith, Nico Collins, Courtland Sutton, Devontae Adams, and Mike Evans. And the production that he has put out over the last couple of weeks has been terrible. He's had one catch for 11 in the Detroit game, one catch for 7 in the San Francisco game. He had a good game against Green Bay, 5 for 97, 4 for 69, 1 for negative 4 against Green Bay the first time. I just think that for the amount of money that is being paid to this player, he is just not putting out the performances that he needs to. Only 2 catches over the last 2 games is not what the Bears need right now. Yes, Colston Loveland has emerged as an amazing tight end for this team, but they're going to need Rome Odunze back in the system, and I think he will give them a little bit of a spark, but DJ Moore needs to hold up his end of the bargain as well.
Do you know the Bears are the 4th team ever to finish with a losing record in their division and win the division?
That is hilarious.
4th team ever.
4th team ever, that's nice.
4th team ever to the last team to do it was the 2010 Chiefs, who also went 2-4 in their division and ended up winning the division. I think that's a Matt Castle led Kansas City Chiefs team, if I'm not mistaken. Anyways, let's go to the next Benice. I'm going to a trio of kickers. I'm making up the rules as we go. First, Cam Little for just the swaggiest celebration out there in hitting a 67-yarder over Tennessee. I think next show we'll be revisiting the bold predictions from the beginning of the year, but I'll tell you what, thumbs up. I'll just say that from Cam Little for me and what he was able to do there. Kyemi Fairbairn, he went 6 for 6, I think, in his game yesterday for Houston, who ended up beating Indy in a game that I think they really should have needed to win, even though they kind of pulled some people in terms of it. But Fairbairn went 6 for 6, and I think he also has the record for most field goals made in a year, if I'm not mistaken, in terms of it. He went like 44 for 48 this year, which is ridiculous. And how about Daniel Carlson for the Raiders, hitting what I think was his career long to beat the Kansas City Chiefs? Didn't mean anything for the Raiders, and I don't care. It's nice to beat the Chiefs if I'm a Raider fan out there. I'm pumping my chest just a little bit, and those trio kickers deserve the kudos from this week.
Yeah, Cam Little is a beast. That man has broke the record twice this year. Well, technically, the previous record twice. He didn't break it last night, but 67 yards is insane. Arkansas, born and bred. I'm going to give a shout-out to Arkansas whenever I can. But
yeah.
Cam Little, I think, is probably the best kicker in the NFL, and this is only his second year. So shout-out to him. And, you know, we saw this weekend, you always need a great kicker, and I think the Jags definitely have one. And Kyemi Fairbairn tied the record. Akers had it previously in 2011 for the 49ers. Right. And I think that he's doing some good work. Had a little bit of issues last season, but he's really come on strong this year. And Carlson, I mean, for a game that really didn't mean anything, good for him.
Why not?
That game was hilarious because no touchdowns were scored and the Raiders won.
14-12. It's not the way you think. Here's the problem. I can't just praise all kickers in general because of last night's game, and we'll get to that maybe momentarily. Wild stuff there. Anyways, Jorge, anything on the kicking from this weekend? Or?
I liked it. It was good.
Yeah.
I mean, at least those guys.
Those guys. We're not talking about Pittsburgh and Baltimore. Les Benatti. God, I don't know. I feel bad doing this one, but maybe this is my own personal, you know. I wanted more from Trey Lance yesterday, man. I was a believer, and now I'm sitting there just – I think the opportunity has come and gone for Trey Lance in that situation, and he unfortunately – 20 for 44, 136 through the air, one pick, including that pick six. And, just a tough performance for a guy who I think was given kind of a vanilla offensive plan anyway against Denver. Somehow I believe these Chargers think they just can go vanilla and think they can beat the Patriots and then want to play Denver next week. I think that's kind of what their mindset was going into that game. It felt like it. Kind of strange. But anyways, bummer. I'm more bummed, not disappointed. I'm bummed about Trey Lance yesterday because that was the one guy I was kind of like, if there's one guy who can maybe get a bag from the backups, he could be it. But I just don't think it's there for him.
I mean, I think it was a tough ask. You have Broncos defense, who I think is the best defense in the NFL, playing their ones. And, the Broncos offense didn't do much against the Chargers. But
they did not have a touchdown drive.
Yeah, and so Trey Lance, it was – for him, I definitely think it is a Benatti because he definitely had the opportunity to really impress and he just didn't. But I'm not going to kill Trey Lance because the guy had to play probably the best defense in the NFL. And so, I mean, for what he had to do at the end of the season, I'm not too mad about it. I think there's another guy that should have been on the Benatti instead that I'll talk about later, I guess. But, yeah.
We'll get to him after the last Benatti. Jorge, anything on the Trey Lance and the Chargers?
No. Yeah. I mean, all right. He just – he's what it is. That's all he is.
All right. Let's go to my last Benatti. The old man still got it. Man, Aaron Rodgers, I'm doing it. 294 through the air, 31 for 47, a touchdown, and in complete control of that drive. Who cares about those timeouts, right? Going down to no timeouts with right before the two-minute warning, but he was a man with a plan and finding a couple of touchdown passes. The last one, the touchdown pass to Calvin Austin, who I know was wide open. But that's the classic vintage drive you look for from the man who is, 42 years old out there? I can't remember his age, but regardless. And I know, he probably shouldn't be in the playoffs because of circumstances with Baltimore's kicking. But regardless, he made the plays when they needed to be made. What a ridiculous ending to that game. And I have to praise somebody. So give me Aaron Rodgers here.
Yeah, Aaron Rodgers, I think that was clearly a vintage performance from him. I mean, this guy, I thought that his career was going to end off of a missed extra point, and I just thought that was just not the right way to go. But when, you know, it called for him to make some big plays, he made them. I think weirdly that loss of DK Metcalf helped this team because in this specific game, I should say, because it kind of forced Aaron Rodgers to throw with between the numbers, and he hasn't really been doing that as much this year. But he hit on a great seam route to Pat Freiermuth, hit to Calvin Austin on the side, which was an amazing route, a hitch and go. And I think Aaron Rodgers, for what he has accomplished this year, I think this is a great end to his career. If this is his last season, it was kind of capped off by a great performance against the Baltimore Ravens team that would not stop. I felt like this is the most complete the Ravens felt this entire year. I just thought there's no way the Steelers can come back and win, and they somehow found a way, and Aaron Rodgers was a big part of that.
Jorge, any thoughts from the Steeler comeback last night?
Yeah, the last drive he had, it just felt like I was watching 2005, 2006 and Rodgers, 2007 and Rodgers more likely.
Yeah, but, yeah, I think you're still riding pine in 2006.
So, I mean, I thought they didn't have a chance really, and then when I saw that drive, I was like, they're gonna win this, and then they missed the field goal, and you're like, okay, what's going on here, and then the Ravens missed the field goal, so you're like, yeah,
bonkers. I believe the Ravens are the first team in NFL history to lose a game while throwing 250-yard touchdown passes in the fourth quarter. Yeah. How about that stat for you?
Yeah, I don't want any praise for Zay Flowers. Man did nothing in that game besides get open because of Lamar Jackson's ability to get outside some tackles.
Do you feel like we didn't have the best? You feel like, I'm sure you feel like the Ravens were the team that probably you wanted more in the playoffs than the Steelers.
Yeah, I was talking to my dad last night, and I think it was a similar conversation because I really did want to see Aaron Rodgers finish his career in the playoffs. But Lamar Jackson having the ability to get to a Super Bowl with no Pat Mahomes, no Joe Burrow was also an exciting prospect. But I'm happy with how the result played out. I think Aaron having the ability to go out there one last time in the playoffs is probably what I like to see.
Hey, all the great ones finish their career in the playoffs. Brady, Rivers, you know, Roethlisberger, Breeze. Not Eli Manning. Anyway.
He had to throw shade, didn't he?
He got benched. Anyways. There's a who's Benatti, who's been ice for the week. Is shaking my head. You're shaking your head, Jorge.
Hey, he's a Hall of Famer guy. Right, he's going to be a Hall of Famer. First ballot Hall of Famer.
You don't end your career on the bench. You end your career.
First ballot.
Kurt Warner ended his career in the playoffs. So who else? What other greats ended retired after the playoffs? Come on. There's a lot young out there.
Jay Cutler. No.
Yeah. Hey, smoking Jake. No, I'm kidding. I'm not kidding. Anyways, let's take a break. And when we come back, we wrap up the show next year on 1430 ESPN, Fresno Valley's local sports leader. Like the legend.
All right, welcome back to Behind the Bench here on 1430 ESPN, Fresno, the Valley's local sports leader. Boy, we have a lot to chew on from the conversations, but we only have just about 12 minutes before we say goodbye and head off to the FCS National Championship. Last news item we want to get to, it was imperative to get to it today. Sports story brought to you by Valley Pure. Pete Carroll out as head coach of the Las Vegas Raiders. The Raiders one and done with him. Firing 74-year-old Pete Carroll after one season. Hey, he goes out with a win. And we'll just forget about it in 5 years when we think about Pete Carroll and his Hall of Fame campaign, per se. But this feels like the move that needed to be made. The Raiders were just absolutely... I don't know what the, you just
call them horrible, man.
They were in a coma the whole year in terms of it. I don't think I have like I don't recall like even like quotes going viral from Pete at press conferences. Nobody cared. Like it just was so blasé in terms of the Pete Carroll era of the Raiders, which just it feels like Art Shell kind of the way he returned, and it was just like we're going back to some sign of the past, and then. Nothing really sustained itself, and here we go. 14 losses on the year, and the Raiders are going to get the number one overall pick, and I think I have some thoughts on what they should do with that pick, which might be kind of a hot take, but we'll get to that a little bit later. But, yeah, I think this obviously was the right move, and where you go from there, I think there certainly needs to be conversations of what the culture of this Raider team can be and what the moves will be, whether Max Crosby is a player on this team next year, which feels increasingly unlikely. But there's a lot to have to be figured out. But I think the coaching position certainly needed to change after 1 year.
Yeah, I think that because there was no noise, there is kind of a weird sense of optimism around this team because I know a lot of people actually had this team doing a lot better than they did last year, and it just did not work out. This team had similar issues than they had last year. You figured out the hard way that you can't just plug a running back into a system and make the running game work. And that defense, they lost a lot of guys. I think a lot of people forget Christian Wilkins was supposed to be on this team, and he was cut early on in the season. Nate Hobbs left this team. You know, you had Ja'Cory Bennett that left this team, even though, I mean, I don't think it was that great on Philly. But this team had a lot of issues. They tried to patch them up, and, you know, you can't patch up a flesh wound with a little Band-Aid, and that's just what happened.
No, it's going to take a lot to overhaul it. It feels like a 2-3 year project if you're being optimistic about what this Raider team can be moving forward. It's kind of funny to think about in the grand scheme of things. Like if I told you, hey, you would start your year with the Patriots win on the road and you would beat the Chiefs at the end of the year, you would take it, Raider fans, wouldn't you? Huh? No. 3-14. Just completely down to the dumps.
They got Tom Brady, bro.
Tom Brady.
So, you know, he's going to solve their problems.
What kind of coach do the Raiders need? That's what I'm asking here right now.
I think they need a young guy that can provide some great...
No.
They've tried the old guys before. This is a team that needs a fresh coat of paint. They have tried some veteran presences in the coaching office, and it just has not worked out. They need a guy that is going to shake up the system and really provide a spark for this team like Ben Johnson did for the Chicago Bears. I know that they've looked at some, like the defensive coordinator in Minnesota that I'm drawing a
Flores.
Blank. Flores. He had the Miami coaching job. But I truly think they need an offensive coach that's going to be able to provide a spark for this team.
I know it's a defensive coach. I think Chris Shula is a name I can think of, but he's big on the pass rushers.
Here's maybe a crazy one. Kurt Cignetti of Indiana. That would be a crazy one.
I don't know if Cignetti's quite leaving yet.
I don't think he will leave, but yeah. I think if he were to be brought in, I think that really just fits the mold of what I'm trying to speak of.
Sarkisian, no.
I honestly believe that I think they need a coach that's been in the NFL before. But I think what they need more, I think they need to fix their front office. I know people.
Spytek's been in for 1 year. That's the guy they hired out of what he was Tampa. He was the Tampa guy with Brady was there.
He's the one that brought in.
He won the Super Bowl in 2020. Yeah, brought in Pete.
Pete and maybe that's his first mistake. But at the same time, you know he's got to try something new. I know that you know, Tom Brady. Everybody talks about Tom Brady and his experience, but I don't know if he's gonna do something in the, you know,
yeah,
he's gonna, if he's able to help anybody, you know. So I think they need to fix their front office and go from there.
Heck, let's get Phillip Rivers on the phone now. Anyway, I heard there's actual rumor mill of Phillip Rivers being somewhat considered in some capacity of being a coach in some form.
He did coach his son's high school.
We're getting a lot
right?
of the former quarterbacks are just being involved in the decision process. Marino's coming in as a – or not Marino. Aikman's consultant. Coming in as a consultant for the Dolphins. Matt Ryan's being brought in for the Falcons right now. Like, they're just going to the well in terms of the star quarterback. But all right, we got a minute left. Want to get to the Daily Spread brought to you by Chichancey Gold Resort and Casino. If you're not trying your luck with your teams today, try your luck with Chichancey Gold Resort and Casino. We got the FCS Championship coming up momentarily. Montana State, Illinois State. You guys been paying attention to this FCS playoff run? Montana State, 10-point favorite in I don't know where the place is, where Vandy plays, wherever it is.
Oh, they're playing in Nashville.
Nashville, that's where that is. You guys got a dog in the race? Illinois State's been a road warrior team this whole run. Beat NDSU, who was the top team on the road in the Fargo Dome. And Montana's looking for the first title of Montana team since 2001. So who you got?
Montana State's 10.5-point favorite. I think they're going to run away with this one. They beat a really good Montana team. I think they're just on a roll right now. If you look at their wins, 44-28 over Montana. And they were the 2 seed all along, and I think they're going to close it up.
What do you got, Jorge?
Yeah, they beat some really good teams, and just shows how good they are. Who's the other one?
Illinois State.
Yeah, Illinois State. It's not – I don't feel like they're as good as Montana State, so I'm going for Montana State putting on some money on that.
Yeah, beyond the North Dakota State win, they didn't really play anyone.
I got some names for you. Daniel Subkowicz, going to get a couple touchdowns from Illinois State side. Starred wide receiver, 18 touchdowns on the year. How about the dual threat quarterback, Justin Lampson of Montana State? Can't wait for it. Should be good. It's kicking off next. So good show today. We'll have 2 hours tomorrow. We'll be back then, guys. Appreciate it as always. FCS Championship from Nashville coming up next on 1430 ESPN.